From the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Then the whole assembly of them arose and brought him before Pilate. There were charges against him, saying, "We found this man misleading our people. He opposes the payment of taxes to Caesar and maintains that he is the Messiah, a king." Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He said to him in reply, "You say so." Pilate then addressed the chief priests and the crowds, "I find this man not guilty." But they were adamant and said, "He is inciting the people with his teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee where he began, even to here." On hearing this, Pilate asked if the man was a Galilean. And upon learning that he was under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was in Jerusalem at that time. Herod was very glad to see Jesus. He had been wanting to see him for a long time, for he had heard about him and had been hoping to see him perform some sign. He questioned him at length, but he gave him no answer. The chief priests and the scribes, meanwhile, stood by accusing him harshly. Even Herod and his soldiers treated him contemptuously and mocked him. And after clothing him in resplendent garb, he sent him back to Pilate. Herod and Pilate became friends that very day, even though they had been enemies formerly. Pilate then summoned the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, and said to them, "You brought this man to me and accused him of inciting the people to revolt. I have conducted my investigation in your presence and have not found this man guilty of the charges you have brought against him, nor did Herod, for he sent him back to us. So no capital crime has been committed by him. Therefore, I shall have him flogged and release him." But altogether they shouted out, "Away with this man, release Barabbas to us." Now Barabbas had been imprisoned for a rebellion that had been taken place in the city, and for murder. Again Pilate addressed them, still wishing to release Jesus, but they continued their shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate addressed them a third time, "What evil has this man done? I found him guilty of no capital crime. Therefore, I shall have him flogged and then release him." With loud shouts, however, they persisted in calling for his crucifixion, and their voices prevailed. The verdict of Pilate was that their demand should be granted, so he released the man who had been imprisoned for rebellion and murder, for whom they asked, and he handed Jesus over to them to deal with as they wished. The words of the Holy Gospel. The trial of Jesus gives evidence of the voice of the accuser everywhere. Satan is working behind the scenes throughout the whole thing. Notice how the Pharisees and the chief priests accuse Jesus of three things, each of which twists his own words. First, that he's misleading the people. Second, that he opposes the payment of taxes to Caesar. And third, that he is a king. This is a classic game plan for the devil, to take something true and good and either to twist it so slightly that it becomes accusatory and therefore false, or to twist something so completely that it's not even connected to the truth in the first place. Either way, he incites us with our thoughts to accuse ourselves and others. Jesus doesn't mislead people. He is, in fact, the very one to lead them to God. He also doesn't oppose paying taxes to Caesar. He had just said three chapters ago that we should render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And of course, he is the Messiah. He doesn't claim to be an earthly king. He doesn't claim to come and subvert the rule of Herod. He's not a king that threatens earthly power in that sense. These are three lies that we have today in modern forms. The lie that Jesus misleads people now appears under the guise of the lie that Jesus isn't actually God, but he is a good man with a moral teaching that any good person would be proud to follow. The lie that opposes paying taxes to Caesar is reformatted today into the twisting of Jesus' words in all kinds of ways. That he doesn't actually want us to be happy. That he's come to condemn us and not to save us. That he doesn't actually want us to enjoy our lives. The lie that Jesus is a ruler at odds with earthly power is akin to the lie that Jesus is a king of our hearts who is demanding and who asks us to give up what we really want in favor of some arbitrary plan for our lives, as opposed to being a gentle shepherd whose yoke, as he says, is easy, whose burden is light, as opposed to being the very author of our happiness, of our desires, even though they might go astray at various points. This accusatory voice of Satan is loud. It often overpowers the gentle voice of God that, as we know from the prophet Elijah and from our own experience, is a still, small voice that speaks in the silent breeze of the heart. But Satan is loud. His accusation causes a din in our ears, in our mental consciousness. Notice how Pilate was resolved to let Jesus go free until the Pharisees and their ilk just kept shouting all the louder. And Pilate, in his weakness, sick of the noise, just gives in. We encounter a similar noise all the time in politics, in the church, and of course, most destructively in our own souls, where the voice of the accuser wants to twist that still small voice of the Lord that assures us of his unconditional love and protection, that assures us that we do not have to work to earn his love, that assures us against the lie that we're not lovable because of our productivity, but because we are his. That the closer we get to him, the more the desires of our heart reflect his own desires. That his plan for us is not at odds with our own ideas of happiness, our own plans. These are lies. They're false accusations on behalf of the one who wants to drown out the sweet voice of Jesus in our hearts. We must rebuke them. We must renounce them and reject them. We must stand against these lies that want to condemn us like they wanted to condemn the Lord. But Jesus is more powerful than they are. The accuser thought he had won when Jesus was killed, but little did he know that Christ's death would be the very means of our union with God. And that blood still flows, still saves us from the accuser at every moment. It allows us to say, "Jesus, come and cover me with all of your precious blood and protect me from that all too convincing voice of the accuser. Fill the wounds in my heart with your blood and with yourself. Convict me that I am yours and that I have nothing to fear if I do not leave your embrace."